For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. 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 For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
Welcome back, season 7. It's been amazing so far. Every guest that we've had on has been so good to listen to. The feedback's been phenomenal, and thank you everybody who continues to tune in each week and download the Clink Stories of Redemption. Today's guest is someone whom I met 28 years ago, one of Australia's most notorious gangsters. He is the last man standing of his generation and era. I met him in a gym at Cessnock Jail 28 years ago. Everybody was hesitant to go up and talk to him. He used to train on his own. There wasn't much that he'd say to blokes. You knew you're in the shit if you did wrong. But I grew a set of balls and asked Graham Abbo Henry, can you put me through some pads, mate? Mate, welcome to the Clink.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Glad to see your head again.
Mate, in all honesty, and for the guys that are listening today, they wouldn't know how much effort we've gone to. Now, when I say effort, it's not an effort for you and I to sit down and have a yarn. That's a piece of piss. We could do that all day long. But, mate, tell you what, trying to get us both to be able to have the internet and everything and the weather, and it's been tough.
Fucking pain in the ass, mate.
It's been tough. I reckon it's been harder than dodging bullets. Hey?
That's like easy.
Mate, listen, yeah, easy, fuck. 20 attempts on your life. Now, that's something that we'll get into that I think is very interesting. Look, for those that, there's many in Australia that know who you are, but I'm sure there's some listeners out there that tune into the Clink each week that just love the stories that they hear, and maybe they don't know who you are. So for them, let's take them back and let's tell them who Graham Abbo Henry is. Let's go back to maybe your teens, around that era where mum and dad, you moved sort of from there and left the home.
Well, mate, I was virtually, I got kicked out of the house, really. I left on my own accord, really, because of the violence in the house. And, not only my old man flogging me mother and punching her up like a prize fighter, but, flogging me, never touched me sister. It came to the age of about 16. I was living out on the streets and living in different places in fucking toilet blocks and fucking putting up with the puss of a night, fucking knocking them out. And then I went home there one night and found blood all through the kitchen. And I always remember this night, so it sticks in my memory. And I went down the hallway looking for my mother, opened up a bedroom, and my father was in there. Now, they'd slept in different bedrooms, so he jammed up all the doors with fucking wardrobes and shit, so he knew I was going to come in and fucking blow up. So I don't know what his fucking old go was. Maybe he was trying to have a hump with her or something. I don't know, but they hadn't slept with each other for fucking 100 years.
Yeah.
But then I ran under the house looking for her, screaming out a name, and I found her under the house, and, he'd battered her like a prize fighter again. And at this time, like, she had big blood clots all over her clothes, and she only had one leg. My mother, she had it cut off when she was 10. And that was really the catalyst that broke the straw on the camel's back, because I'd been punching on with him since I was 13. And he always was getting away with me, punching me in the throat and fucking, We always fist fought on the front lawn. And then I just said, fuck it, I've had enough. So I ran through I kicked the fucking door in, and battered him in the bed, and fucking knocked him down on the ground. Then I ran up all the way, pulled out a barbecue fork with about 6-inch long prongs on it, and fucking jammed it into him, into his chest, into his face. And he was taken to hospital, and there was really no inquiry that I can ever recall. I might have talked to me mother so he must have shut his mouth, so he had some solidarity about him, but he wasn't my real father anyway. But I sort of guessed that all my life, because I looked different than him.
Yep.
But I didn't really find out until I was 65, 25 years ago.
Really? And was it your real dad that actually served? He was called up for the war?
No, that was me dad. that raised me.
Okay, yep.
Okay, and he served in Syria in the Middle East.
Yep.
And came home, knocked on the door, and some other bloke answered the door while he'd been away fighting. So he left that family, then he married my mother.
Wow.
And I had a sister to him. He already had three kids to them, and he just left them. And so I guess he was filthy when I came along because I come from an Indigenous bloke. And, you know, and I got that silly nickname Abbo at 14 years of age by all my mates. And it was even my Aboriginal mates that I knew around, you know, the Fern, Red Fern, and all that blokes I grew up with, Eric Gunnyset and Wally Carr and all them type of blokes. And they all used to say to me, fuck, you're the only Aboriginal run around that know you're fucking Aboriginal.
Especially around Redfern in those times.
Yeah.
Everybody knew who they were.
I just thought I was fucking Spanish. I just thought I looked like
dead set.
That style, you know?
Yeah, wow.
I know, but that's how it was. Then I, as I say, I pissed off and just I lived my own life. I run my own life, and Berkeley always fucking did, mate. So I ended up on the streets and running around, and I guess by the time I used to lead a little gang. There was about 40 of us or 50 of us used to hang around in a big group, but and we were called the Ebbing Apprentices. We're all fucking sharpies.
Ah, and, yeah, yeah. Okay, so can we just touch on that for a minute? Because I've heard this before. Rockers, sharpies, and what was it like?
Long hairs, surfies.
Surfies, like skinhead sort of. There was, there was in the city back then, and I'm just trying to touch base on it because a lot of the generation, they wouldn't have a clue. But these were identified as your cliques, your sort of, your different, your different groups. You either were a part of this or you're a part of that.
Yeah, that's right.
I wouldn't even try and compare it to the shit that we've got out there today. But anyway, moving forward on that, you were a part of either that clique or that clique, weren't you?
That's it. And if you were a part of the Long Ears or the Rockers or the Surf, well, we attacked that.
Yeah, wow.
That was it. We just fought anyone, but even the other Sharpies, we didn't care who they were. So we'd travel around and hunt them up and punch on with them. But out of that whole group,
where do Sharpies come from, Bud Abbo? Where do you get...
Mate, I think it was a Pommy thing, really.
Yeah.
And the reason they were called Sharpie is because we used to dress real sharp.
Sharp,
you know, we had the three-quarter coats, the no socks, the slip-on shoes, the fucking, you know, high-waisted pants. We used to get them tailor-made at City Greens, the Glebe, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, even like you see Peaky Blinders going around, we had the handicaps with the razors in them.
Ah, right. You know,
you know, so we'd pull them off and cut them up, you know.
Wow.
That was all part of it. I only found something on some fucking thing on the media about a big brawl that happened down at this long-haired club, and I got to fucking mention it. Like, and it must have been fucking, well, I'm 70 now, so fucking 55 years ago, I was 15.
Wow. Wow.
I just found it in there. Yeah.
So 50 years ago, we're talking around the Vietnam sort of era, Vietnam War era.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I volunteered for that even. And I volunteered for the National Service to get myself out of a little bit of trouble. And because I'd been the only one out of my whole family history never been to war. And that I... anyway, they knocked me back because I had a violence record. And I thought, well, you're going to pull some bloke out of a fucking bank, teach him how to kill in 6 weeks, and then send him over to Vietnam and wonder why he comes home a fucking spinner.
I had this conversation. So if you remember, and it's funny you say that, because I was 18, 19, and they were talking about bringing conscription back in. which one? I think it might have been... man, what am I, 46? Anyway, whatever it was, yeah, a long time ago. And I actually said that I would be keen to, I just got out of jail, actually, Long Bay. It was might have been actually not long after I'd seen you. And I was going to do the same, put my hand up and go and serve. And I thought, you know what? That's right, it was. It was kicking off. And they were talking about...
That's right, Indo,
and then it was Afghanistan.
Right.
And they were talking about recalling again, having conscription. And I thought, fuck it. I'll go and put my hand up and I'll go and train. So I did all the inquiries. You know what they told me? I don't have a year 10 right. certificate, so I couldn't be accepted.
Oh, fuck, mate.
And I said, what the fuck's a school certificate going to do when I'm standing on the front line pulling a trigger at the fucking enemy?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so nothing changed. What my point is, your generation and then my generation, I tried to do the same thing and they didn't want a bar of me because, yes, I had also a violent criminal history. But the main factor around it was I didn't have the school qualifications.
Oh, my fucking heaven.
So I was knocked back to go and serve for the country. But yet we're shit.
Fuck, we didn't go anyway. I had enough wars to deal with here.
Fucking, mate, wars, I tell you what, you've been through a few. And, mate, I really can't wait to get in. And, look, I don't want to take anything away from your book, but, this is The Clink. This is Australia's number one true crime podcast. And I know that you've been on plenty. But I can't help but want to really make this the best one you've been on because I feel that, you know, your story is so much more than just a bloke that was a part of a gang or a crew that was involved in, history in Australian crime. But, there's a lot more behind the scenes and the men that were around you and, those that are still, talked about but are no longer here. Mate, you are a fucking lucky man. And I say that with respect.
I'm fucking blessed.
Someone's kissed you on the dick, I tell you.
Yeah, well, mate, look, people always say, you must have been a lucky prick. And I thought, well, mate, I don't put it down to luck. I just put it down to this incredible consciousness I had and an awareness that I had when I was a young bloke. And my mother taught me about my spirit and things like that. And I've got right into it. I'm right into it, and so is my young daughter. We're pretty psychic. And, I've even seen my own spirit. I saw it in 1979 in fucking during a meditation in fucking Goulburn Jail.
Wow.
And when I seen it, I'd come out of my fucking body, made a noise, and then went back in just a fucking quick, and I got up off the floor and went, what the fuck? Put the window. I could never do it again. I've never been able to do it again ever since. But I'm right into all that stuff. So what people call gut feelings, I just call it the divine intelligence coming from somewhere else.
Yep.
That comes through your consciousness and it tells you, warns you. Everyone's got it. You just got to be fucking hooked into it.
I have to totally agree, mate. I believe in 100%.
For me, I've been hooked into it.
Yeah, and I think that it's important to listen to that. Ever since I was a young kid, I always would see things, not realizing what it meant back then, but I would see things prior to them happening. And when they happened, I'd be like, hang on, I knew this was going to happen, or I shouldn't have been in this position, or I could have been elsewhere. As I got older, I really become very well in touch with that. I mean, as we've talked before, and you walk in a room, it wouldn't matter how many in the room. I'd scan the room immediately and know where I stood and who was what and what was who.
Oh, fuck it.
And it was just something.
That's called reading the room, son.
Yeah. And I used to just, growing up on the streets as well, it was something that you had to have. If you didn't have it, you were going to get either stabbed in the back, bottled in the head, or left in the gutter.
100%, man.
It's been something that, you've made a part of your life and kept you to where you are today. I mean, we're here talking now. You are the last man standing of the generation of what I'd like to call gentlemen but real gangsters, because you were gentlemen. As much as you were tough guys, you were definitely, eye class as old school gentlemen, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly the last one of the what you'd call the gangster gangs, the armed robbers, the fucking, the ones that were classified as the heavies, I mean, like say to me, what do you want to ever do that for? I said, well, I didn't join organised crime to be a fucking tough guy. That was the last thing on my fucking mind. I wanted to just earn fucking money.
Yeah.
And so I'd earned enough, I wanted to move on, of course. But as as things go on, you never think the good times are going to fucking end. And, of course, all good things fucking do. And And it took 35 years for it to come to an end. But
you know. 35 years. Let's go back to the beginning of those 35 years because, you know, look, we don't glorify any of these crimes on the clink. So for all the younger people out there, you know, Abbo and I aren't sitting down here telling you to go out and have a crack at robbing armor guards or banks or, you know, squaring up on people with knives and guns. It's not what this is about. But this is a true story from a man that has lived and walked it that can never, ever have it taken away from him. There's many a folklore and the tales and the bullshit. And this is directly, if I can say it, straight from the horse's mouth, you know, which is something that you just don't get today. You know, I've had a couple of guests on here. Bernie Matthews was someone who I really, I miss. I became very good friends with him. And, you know, Bernie was one of those blokes too, that as far as I'm concerned, you know, when he spoke about himself or what was about, there was no bullshit behind his stories, you know, and he was,
No, he didn't talk shit at all, Bernie, you know, but you know, unfortunately for Bernie, he created all his drama in his life. You know, he fucking wouldn't conform and fucking he fucking paid heavy penalties for it.
Mate, like, didn't he? His story was...
My whole fucking idea, even when I was in prison, was just fucking do your time. Fucking get out. Don't get involved in the gang fucking bullshit, you know? I remember a bloke coming up to me years ago in the can and saying, mate, you got to fucking walk the walk and join our fucking gang. And hey, listen, mate, I'll walk the walk. You be king of the shit house and I'll be king out on the fucking street, mate.
I like that.
I walk on me fucking own, buddy.
And that's something that I noticed about you. I mean, I went into the system at an 18-year-old at Long Bay. Nine wing was a transit wing. You had the special purpose and all the trannies across in 10 wing, and it was protection, a strict protection. You had the RIC, and they just shut the SIP down, so they were moving everyone back and forth from Grafton, Goulburn, and Maitland at that stage. And, you know, you've seen it. When you walked through the circle there, people knew who people were. You couldn't hide. You know, I remember the likes when Lenny McPherson came in, and it was around that time when him and that Contra Narcus and all that come undone up around the cross for the...
Yeah, exactly.
I'll never forget that. He's sitting at a table and he's got like fucking 10 heavies all sitting around him, ex-military and fucking all these Greek...
He knew them.
Yeah, he did, mate. He did. Like, it was just... It was fucking bizarre. And then all of a sudden he disappeared. So I don't know where he went. Maybe he went to Supergrass. Well, I don't know.
I believe he ended up in Brisbane way, and then I heard he got a lag, and he, you know, so all his informant might help him in New South Wales, but when he went up the Gold Coast, it didn't help him. So I heard he got a lag up there. I was talking to a bloke about him not too long ago, but even on the street, you know, I used to get protection money off him, but even on the street, he used to... walk around, you know, with all these fucking Korean fucking bodyguards and fucking,
even like it was weird. In jail, he had these, they were like ex-military SAS, like fucking heavies, and they would literally, you know, they'd be, you know, the yards, the steel table, and then, you know, they would literally sit and around, stand around. You couldn't get near him.
I mean, that's what he did, you know, so. He paid for his protection outside. That's why he always paid us every week. You know what I mean?
So, you ran with a crew that was notorious. There was no backward step, and if the backward step was seen, you were gone. You ran it with an iron fist. Let's just go back and talk about some of those times because, I mean, obviously, these times you've moved on, you've been convicted, so we're not telling any stories that is not really public knowledge. But, you know, look... You're doing payroll days. You're doing earns that back in the day, the money was phenomenal amounts. And you guys were the only ones really. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. There was other good earners out there. But when you talk about consistently turning up and pulling off big jobs, you guys were the crew.
Oh, we certainly were, mate. You know, like, and our specialty, of course, was the armor guards. And, you know, but I've been doing this since I was 15, mate. Like, I was pretty good at putting things together. I always became the organiser. I was always the organiser. And even that Clive Small gave me a fucking rap about that on the Vice Channel one day and said that I was the organiser, you know, which was a nice thing coming from an assistant commissioner instead of bagging. But Anyway, mate, I'd been running around doing things like that, like in the old days, like the water board and all that. All the workers, they'd go around in one car doing all the payrolls, you know, and they'd have one bloke sitting in the car with a gun and they'd go around to all the jobs.
And pay through the envelopes, the weekly wage. Yeah. Wow.
You know what I mean? All their pay packets would be there. So, we'd just work out where they were going, where they started, get them at the earliest convenient time so we'd get the fucking lot.
Yeah.
And we started doing, I was doing those with a crew, but like as a young bloke, you know what I mean? Like I'm talking 18, 19, when I just got out of the can. And then I started to run with, you know, like Nettie Smith and blokes like that. Well, that was 1976.
Great year that. I was born in that year.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yes.
And, I started to run with him. Well, he was under a bit of a cloud when I started to run with him because his mate had just got 13 years and Bobby Chapman. And they'd done some silly fucking robbery out at Harris Park and it was worth about 70 fucking thousand or something. And anyway, they didn't get it and it was all botched up, but he got 13 years and Ned got through the break and Detective Rogerson got up in the box, that was in 1976, and gave it evidence on his behalf. So,
wow.
So he was pretty sweet from those days. So when I fronted him over it, and I said, well, where the fuck are you at? You know, like Bob's in there doing 13. Yeah. You're on parole for rape. Both went in for rape.
Mm.
How were you on fucking bail? And he said, I fucking paid him, mate. That's all he wanted, to get fucking paid. And he said, I can do anything. And I said, we haven't got a fucking gang to do anything. So, you know, I knew that's how things operated because I knew that Lanny McPherson and all that before that, and Georgie Freeman and Stan the Man Smith, they were all doing the same thing for 100 years. And that's how organised crime started. They were the first real organised crime gang in Sydney.
Lanny McPherson, I look, this is my personal opinion. I did get to meet him. I worked with him in the kitchen at Cessnock as well. I was at Long Bay with him, and I was there when he passed away at Cessnock. And it was a terrible thing to see, you know. Well, he was an old man. Mate, you know what I'll never forget about Lenny McPherson? The size of his fucking hands.
Yeah, big hands. Yeah, big.
When he shook your hand, it was huge. It was huge.
Yeah,
it
was like a man. Yeah.
He was just, and his demeanor, he was, mate, I don't know how you knew him. I didn't know him personally like that. Yeah. But, you know, you just seen his aura and demeanor. He just was always on the ball. He was never, ever complacent. He was never, ever arrogant. He was always very humble. He was a gentleman. But he was always, you could see his eyes. His eyes were never, ever fucking shut.
Oh, no. He always kept his eye up. And
very, you know, very clever up. Man for I mean, what he did.
He was in C-Wing with me up in the dorm.
That's right.
And the truth goes, we didn't have long to go at that stage, and actually going to go and do a few things for him when he got out, and because he still had, even though all of the things that they used to do had all gone by then, and I was running with, you know, Smith and all that, and I'd actually left Smith's gang by then. I'd run my own gangs from 86.
With that, because I don't think people actually understand, you know, when they see the media and all they hear is Graham O'Henry and Nettie Smith, you know, and they see these pictures of you two in the fucking yard side of Nine Wing in the gym, you know, and, like looking like you're 5'8", tight, all this sort of stuff, you know, and from go to woe. That's why I'm trying to bring it up, because I think it's important that people need to understand these truths and facts. And Can we just touch on that, mate? Because I think it'll clear a lot of things up from the misconception that people have.
Well, as I say, from 76 till 86, I ran with him. And in all that time, then there was 4 attempts on my life during all of that time. And when I started to work it out, I knew it was coming from within my own camp. So it was my own mates trying to knock me, and that's what happens in that world, you know. And, you know, and as I always say to people, they say, oh, no, you've got it back to front, mate. You keep your enemies close and your friends close and your enemies even closer. I said, I keep my friends closer than my fucking enemies, son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because they're the ones that get you. They're the ones that stab you in the back. They're the ones that get about your missus while you're in the can or, you know, not that anyone's ever got about mine. They wouldn't be a fucking liar.
Ain't that the fucking truth? They're rules, but they're plain and simple rules. I think that's gone out the window today. I was talking to someone the other day about, you know, the way, and I'm not sitting here putting anyone down, so if you listen to this, don't take it to heart. I'm speaking in general, but the caliber of, I don't know. Do you even call them? They're not gangster criminals. I don't know. I don't even know what, you know, there used to be years ago a term that you could give, like you fellas, you know what I mean? Like you were staunch crims or you were a staunch gang or, you know, but old school knockabout gentlemen, you know what I mean? That's how it was spoken about. I mean, how do we talk today about today's style of, I don't know. And like I said, I don't want to be belittling or disrespectful, but it's very hard to put into words, but you can be guaranteed that they're going to rob your fucking missus, take your dog, empty your fridge, and leave you posted.
Shoot your mother.
100%.
You know, different rules. Different rules, different fucking skills, different people, mate, you know?
But even to the fact now that you see in the system, like I remember coming in, and if someone was labelled no good, you didn't produce that paperwork. You had 24 hours or 48 hours in the yard to whack it up. If you didn't pull it up, everyone would see you getting pumped in that fucking yard and carried out in a stretcher. I remember I was 18 and I was at the Bay, and I remember stretchers coming out in 1 week, and it was at a time where there was a lot of wars going between Goulburn and Maitland and also and everyone was coming in from transit into the Bay because nine wing was the transit wing. Mate, that's you can be guaranteed there was a stretcher coming out of there every day.
Yeah.
And Paulie Martin and all that crew were in there then.
That word around too much today. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, everyone's no good. Everyone's a dog.
They don't know. They don't know. I mean, I get idiots on social media saying, get back to Banyard, mate. You know what I mean? Like, they wouldn't walk up and say that to me. I'd cut their head off. And they were the moon even at 70.
Yep, 100%.
But, I'm not putting myself out there as the fucking toughest guy around anything, but I don't cop fucking shit.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And if these fucking, it's like the blokes running around with, like as I say, when I run with Ned, I ran with him from 76 to 86, and he had what the media called this green fucking light.
Right? I'm glad you're bringing this up because I was going to leave it alone, but you know what? Let's knock it on the fucking head right now. Let's talk about it. Yeah, good.
I heard something on your program one day and a bloke talking.
Yep.
And he made a fucking statement that, you know, I got offered a green light and this bloke's an ex-junkie, right, got offered the green fucking light and naturally, that's what they did to the police outside the organised crime circle. All got dirty on the big cops earning the fucking money off the organised crime gangs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Now, so they started to do it. So they started to stand over all of the fucking, you know, the smaller crims. You know, I'm not putting them down. I'm just saying they were down there and they were on the gear. And so they were utilising them. And they were fucking stamping them and taking fucking money off them and fucking even paying them in fucking gear and keeping the money.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's not what organised crime fucking at.
Yeah.
You know, or if a copper come up and said, listen, mate, there's a fucking robbery at town, so we're going to do it. This all come out of fucking silly Ned's mouth. But Ned made all these silly statements in the Independent Commission Against Corruption that coppers giving police badges and uniforms and fucking all this fucking shit to rob places. That was bullshit, mate. We had them made.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
We fucking, all things, he just made it up to fucking try and get himself a fucking sweet deal, which never happened.
Mm.
But that green light, Lenny had, we had, right? So we could virtually do anything we fucking liked. And we didn't pay every fucking time we did a crime. We did it when it might have been a hard place to get away from.
Yeah.
But every now and then, if we got a nice big urn, we'd make sure there was a package went back to the fucking Ed Jack.
Yeah, got a bit of a drink out of it to keep them sweet.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep, I do.
I mean, listen, all the fucking gangland fucking murders, no one would have ever been pinched until Ned opened up his fucking mouth while fucking in the Independent Commission Against Corruption. And then he got wired up in the cell by his cellmate.
That's right.
Right, on behalf of the police, because I was filthy on him then because he turned on him, right? Mm. Now, and he turned on me and he got me involved and fucking I got kicked out of the inquiry. They kept me in solitary for 2.5 years thinking they'd weaken me. And I thought, you're fucking kidding, mate. I'll be here for 8 years. I won't fucking open your fucking gob. And I didn't.
Wow.
And they needed that collaboration.
I don't think anyone would have been game enough, Hobo, to even speak out of school back then. I mean, let's be really honest here. Today it's easy to tell on someone and it's just common. You can go and give someone up and it's okay. You can, be a part of a crew and have a fallout and go and just write statements and, give them a Bible of the world that you were living. Go back into your era, and even, at my era, I mean, that's how it was in the earlier stages. I mean, it's definitely changed today, but, mate, you wouldn't have found too many people. I mean, if you produced paperwork on someone, it would have been like, fuck, are you kidding me? Yeah. Whereas today, if you produce paperwork on someone, you go, oh, well, fucking, I expected that.
But I mean, we wouldn't even get paperwork because I didn't trust paperwork. I mean, they could have signed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, the old bullshit nowadays was the fabrication of statements and the, the unsigned records of interview and the cops had fucking. So I used to just say to the cops, go and get me, you got to get me better evidence than that. But when the video stuff started coming out, I was paying for it. I was getting the information who they fucking were. I know all the fucking skunks down there.
Ah.
And mate, there was blokes running around for the Crime Commission fucking still knocking blokes and selling kilos of gear until they caught up with him at the Kemba in the fucking petrol station and shot him fucking dead.
Yeah.
And then there's other blokes that ran with fucking Ned that work with them, and they put a team together. I've even had them under that Mark Standen, the assistant director of police.
Wasn't he the one involved in that big import as well?
In the pseudo-ethadrine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, was that 12, 13 years ago? Was it that long ago?
On the bottom or something. He's got about 2.5 years to go or something.
It was about 14 years ago or something, wasn't it? 15 years ago.
Yeah, about 14 and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was involved with this crew to fucking get rid of me, Mickle Hurley, and fucking two other blokes, because that was a little takeover bid and he wanted to get rid of us. And even at the end of that sentence where I was training you, they tried to knock me, that same crew, on works release out at Rothbury. I was working out at the train museum.
I used to date a girl at North Rothbury. Right. I know where you're talking, just outside of Cessnock there, near the mines.
That's right.
Yeah.
They used to take me out there, and then through this psychic shit that I used to get, the night before it happened, I dreamt about this massive big snake. And it was in the suburb of Pyrmont. I even knew where it was. And I was pulling this snake out of a drain, a fucking real big one. Right, so it meant a big enemy. And when I was a kid, I used to have nightmares about snakes. And my mother would say, what are you dreaming about? I said, snakes. She said, you're going to have a lot of fucking enemies.
Yeah, wow.
How fucking spot on was she?
So mum was Indigenous?
No. She was a Palmer.
Okay.
Right.
She just had a really good intuition.
Yeah, she had all this stuff. She was right into all that.
Yeah, right.
And then she taught me about all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But where was I? So I'm pulling out this big snake out of this big drain, and then it turned around and went like through the side of my face, right? So I knew it was going to miss me. Like if you're bitten or you're fucking. Well, you're going to get it, right?
So it struck at you. The snakes turned to strike at you but missed both sides of your face.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying?
Right?
Yep, got you.
So the next day, the screw drops me off at the fucking gate there. I walk in and there's an old train there and there's a bloke who lives in the train there. and like a caretaker.
Yeah, yeah.
And he works on the site too. And was on about 150 acres.
Mm.
As I'm walking in, just something caught my eye, and I looked to the right, and two blokes stood up, all in camouflage gear, balaclavas on, one big bloke, one little bloke. In my book, I called it Dog Day Morning. I thought it was appropriate for the little maggot, right?
So, wow.
Anyway, they've let go at me, and I had a work bag on me, like was hanging over me, the front of me.
Oh, the little side sack things that they used to
so
give
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I threw it over me back to give me back some protection, you know?
Yeah.
And as I was running, all I'd been doing for 3 months prior was sprinting.
Yeah.
I was beating all the 20-year-old kids.
Yep.
I was 47. I was fucking humming. So I just fucking took off. And then the adrenaline ran out of me legs, but they'd unloaded about 18 shots at me.
And
they
missed.
Kept reloading. And what they were 38s. I mean, if they had any brains, they would have had 9 mils or fucking a machine gun or something and fucking got rid of me. But anyway, when the coppers turned up there about 3/4 an hour later, so I knew straight away in my own head, they're fucking involved, right? So
Hang on, just slow that down. So just to put that into perspective for somebody that doesn't understand this, you're on works release, and you're a high-profile inmate. You're public interest for pretty well all your... So for you not to have somebody be seen there after a shooting immediately would be fucking ludicrous, because there should have been somebody watching you at pretty well all times, give or take.
Yeah, really. Yeah, exactly right.
Like 45 minutes before they turn up. That's red hot.
I mean, it wouldn't have made any fucking difference, but anyway, I remember just hurtling, you know, and as I was, the adrenaline came out of me legs. And I fell out there red, and I looked back, and he was standing there like 50 yards as the crow flies away, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I went, your old man was called Who Can I? Who Can I Tell On? And I said, and it runs in the fucking family, mate.
So you knew who this bloke was?
I knew straight away who it was because of my dream.
Yeah, right.
And I knew by the size of the little bloke and the size of the big bloke exactly who it was.
Wow.
Right? So in my own head, I went, righto, here I am. I'm just about ready to get out. I've got 2 weeks to go. This is fucking happened. But I remember going back to the prison fucking. Well, later on, they found cable ties and everything like that. So they're going to put me in a hole somewhere. So anyway, so they fucking missed. And anyway, I finally get back to the fucking prison after the detective taken me to the police station, and I said, well, I've got nothing to fucking tell you.
Yeah.
I'll sort it out myself.
Yep.
So went back to the fucking jail, and here's the fucking governor on the phone talking to head office saying, I want my officer to get a fucking medal. He deserves a medal.
For fucking what?
He would have been 3 fucking miles away when I was getting shot. What about my fucking medal?
You get the gold medal for the fastest runner.
Fucking, well, that's what my mate said. He stuck his head out the window and he said, you look like Carl fucking Lewis going. You know? But they ended up getting him, and they battered him with a gun.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting a compo claim out of it anyway. So I said it was worth it fucking getting belted up.
Oh, the screw ended up getting copped.
No. The bloke who was the caretaker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They give him a serve. They battered him there. He came out and they pulled him out. They flogged him with the gun. So.
And look, I'm going to ask the obvious, and you know, did they ever fucking catch up? Was you ever see him again?
Yeah, I did. As soon as I got out, I fucking snuck in around the area where they were, and snuck into one bloke's house, and I was just about to fucking sneak him, and saw someone else come in the fucking house, so I had nothing on my head, so. Mm. So I just closed the door and fucking walked out. I told him actually to his face. So what I did, I put on a meet. I put it on in the America's Cup bar in the Hilton. 3 p.m. I said, be there and bring fucking this bloke and this bloke and this bloke.
Yeah.
So They bought them all right. They were hiding me on the bar. They were fucking everywhere. I walked in on me Pat Malone,
yeah.
Right? And I fucking just walked in. I sat down. They fucking walked in. The fucking blood boiled in me. I said, no, just use your red boot gun.
Mm.
So they come around the table and fucking sat there. They said, do you want a beer? I said, fucking beer? I don't want a beer. I'm here to fucking tell you. You fucking missed me. It was you, right? You and your fucking mate who just walked in the door and walked out. And he said, no, what? And I said, well, listen, don't insult my intelligence, you fucking see, right?
Mm.
Don't insult it, because that's the worst thing to fucking do.
Yeah.
So then there was another bloke sitting to the right of me who used to be a good friend of mine. And he was a willing bloke. But he'd now joined this crew because they had plenty of bugs. And then all what had happened, they'd heard rumours, because when Ned rolled over to the Independent Commission against
corruption. So this is after that time of you and Nettie running tight, and now you moved into that era where he was going through the commissions and so on.
He was serving life trying to get himself out of fucking jail.
Okay, so we're moving forward.
He was trying to get out of jail card, and he never got it. And he went to the National Crime Authority and gave up all the crims.
When was that, right? The early 80s, or was that in the early 90s?
93, 94.
Yeah, right.
But he'd been seeing him since 1990. So 9 months prior to me coming to jail, I kicked off my lagging in 91.
Right,
so, I knew that he'd been seeing him. Well, that put the fucking wind up me. He talked about robberies I'd done. Not only I'd done, but he was never even involved in the fucking thing. And that put the fucking wind up me. I thought, well, right, I better fucking have a fucking smart fucking move here. So I thought about it and thought about it. I thought, oh, fuck, I don't want to get involved in this fucking shit, you know?
Yeah.
But then in the end, I had to make the decision. As I said to Smith in the yard, I said, listen, you're just talking about coppers. You're going to make up stories about coppers. All right, well, go for your fucking life. I couldn't give a fuck what you say.
Yeah, right? I get that.
I said, but at the end of the day, this is just an inquiry. What will happen then, it'll go to a court case. So then you'll be called in the court case, and then they'll say, well, okay, well, who you did that robbery with? The police said, you're telling us you got a green light off this robbery. Well, who'd you do it with? Well, if he wouldn't nominate who he did it with, he would have had no credibility.
And the thing is, too, him being put in this position, and if we talk about that green light, he would have disclosed so much information to those coppers over those years that they would have had factual evidence of times and places of things that they should never have fucking known, because he would have been sitting down having drinks, talking shit, giving them their fucking envelopes, whatever they were doing. But they would have had this in the back of their head. So while he's flipping on them, they'd be building fucking cases on all you guys.
That's right. You know, and like, prior to that, like, no one had ever seen him fucking talk to Jack or fucking, like, we'd seen him talk to Jack, but we didn't see him fucking ever fucking give anyone up or anything. Anything like that, mate, it would have been fucking all over for him.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You know, whatever he did on the sly, we never fucking saw it. So, you know, and the same with Lenny. They said things about Lenny. Oh, he made all these big tapes every week. Don't know that Bob Bottom wrote these books. Made these massive old tapes and handed them in to the fucking Gunner Kelly, who was his main man, you know, like Rogerson was to Nettie.
Right, okay.
And I said, but they've never been able to produce them, mate. You know, it's all fucking shit.
Mm.
You know, like, whatever, Rogerson was put on the spot by Ray Martin on Channel 9 one night. And he said, well, right, who's he fucking giving up? He couldn't nominate anyone, mate. But he got on TV and put him on the dock. But, you know, but as it turned out, he rolled.
Yeah.
And when he couldn't get out, he said, fuck it. And he made up all these stories. They tried to murder him and all this shit. Well, I had to get involved in this inquiry.
Yeah.
And so everything he said, I said the fucking opposite. Right?
Oh, fuck.
So I read all his transcripts. So yeah. I'd say to him, so what are you going to say? And he's going to say this, that. So they'd say to me, well, what? So you had a green light. I said, well, apparently, I've got no idea. I said, I never paid any coppers. I've never seen them get paid.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it wasn't now, your green light, was it?
About a year into it. About a year into it. So I get pulled into the Independent Commission Against Corruption in a private inquiry.
Yep.
There's just me, a couple of barristers, and fucking Ian Temby, the commissioner.
Yep.
And I've written about this in my book, and I'd fucking go on TV and say it. And they said, and he said to me, how is it? So we must have been reading, you know, like hearing the tapes of it. Because I said, I'm only doing a tape recorded interview. So you can't verbal me.
Yeah, right? Yep.
So if you make a fucking statement, I'm going to fucking prove you wrong.
Mm.
Right? So I said, all right, well, this is what I did. Yeah, I robbed that place and robbed that place. He said, who'd you do it with? I said, oh, Laurie Johnson and fucking Chris Flannery. He said, but this was 1987 of a. Flannery disappeared. I said, well, that's what you think. You know what I mean? Like, I just fucking gave them dead fucking people. Where
so
fucking Ned...
these names were all people that are no longer here.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and you know, that's how I played them off the break and they fucking hated it.
Mm.
Well, then they kept coming to me saying, come on, fucking, you've got to fucking say something. I'm fucking not saying nothing. So 2.5 years later, they call me in the inquiry, put me in the fucking witness box, and they fucking put a statement in front of me, and this is supposed to have come off the tape. And the tape says, yeah, we pulled up in Goulburn Street, and I walked up the stairs into the fucking Goulburn Hotel, and we paid Detective fucking Chaffee from the fucking armed robbery squad, and fucking then I walked in. I said, that's not my fucking statement. Play the fucking tape.
Mm.
He said, you signed the fucking statement. I said, because I made a record of tape recorded fucking interview. I said, play the fucking tape. Get out. That's all he said to me. That was the fucking end of my evidence.
Are you serious?
Fucking 2.5 years. They put me in there for a fucking minute and a half of bullshit.
Wow. So,
and everyone kept saying, call him back, let him fucking explain himself. And they wouldn't fucking call me back.
So what was that classed as perjury as well? Was the day...
And I said, you got anything to say, anyone? Come and fucking see me, boy.
Yeah.
I was with Stan Smith one night, Stan the man Smith, not Nettie Smith.
Yeah.
And I ran around with him for 13 years. I run with Ed for 10, run a gang on my own for about 7 or 8, and then I run with...
So, Abbo, can I just ask you, mate, did you and Ned bring your teams together and become one big sort of force, or was it Ned left his crew and then you and him had your crew, or how was that?
No, we just stayed, we ran our own things, mate. And as I say, everything that Lenny and all them had was going out of fashion, but Lenny got tied up with the leads up around, you know, with the Bayers and all that. They were no good anyway, and they were doing the gear up there, but Lenny never got involved in the gear. He was getting money out of them, but that gang never got involved in the drugs. There's all this bullshit running around that George Freeman used to buy heroin off Trimboli. They're all fucking underbelly bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're fucking crap. They kept away from it. The only bloke in the whole gang was Stan the Man Smith, who said, if we don't move on, then we're going to break up. And he said, and if you're not ready to do that, I'm fucking moving on. So that's what he did. He moved on. He went overseas and operated and worked for years. And he probably knocked about 16.
Wow.
And, but he was a very smart, intelligent motherfucker. He never got paid for jobs that he did. He did it for the gang.
Was there also to the time around, and just quote me if I'm wrong, but I met another bloke in jail when I was young, Dave Kelleher, who was a part of that.
Now he's a crime commission informant.
Yeah, right. Okay. I didn't know that.
And a drag queen. And a drag queen.
Wow. How times change.
No, he sued the crime commission.
Wow.
Sued him because he didn't get paid enough money. They paid him $2 million for information he provided, and he said, I want 20. So that was 10% of $220 million he rounded up for.
So just let me get this right, because he was on... he was doing a double brick, wasn't he?
And I wrapped him in my book as a good bloke.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. I mean, I remember him, I remember playing squash with him, actually, back in the day in the yard. He was a fucking fit, gun fit squash player. Fit as. Very clean cut, tall man, blonde hair, fucking very well good looking.
He the was, blonde god that you
think yep, was. Yep. And, mate, he was doing a big fucking whack.
He was the first bloke to ever get life for importation.
Was that when life was life or life was still a brick?
When life was fucking... No, the chains.
So for those that didn't know, a brick meaning 10 years. So 10 years was a life sentence back in the day. That's right. But even then, they weren't really handing them down like willy-nilly like they do today, were they? No. You had to really fuck up to cop a brick.
No, he was out on work release and he'd already served 18 years.
That's there you go. So he had 20 or something.
Parole, right?
Mm.
And he was working at the city taps in town as a fucking instructor or fitness fucking bloke or clean the gym or some shit. But he took a break and decided, and he used to ride from there to the prison. So what he did, he dressed up in drag and drove up the fucking main street of the fucking city, and the crime commission grabbed him. Right? So they said to him, well, what do you got on you? And he had a kilo of fucking pills on him, fucking ecky. So they said, listen, do you want to go back to jail and search? Because you'll never get fucking out to the first bloke who ever got life.
Wow.
Right? And you'll be on life parole. So we went, so he said, all right, I'll fucking trick him. So that's what he first tried to do. We tried to trick him with bullshit evidence. And then they come back to him and they say, that's not fucking good enough, buddy. So they let him out. And then he started to fucking bring in the information. Anyway, he sued him. Now he lives on some boat somewhere off fucking Thailand or somewhere like that. And from what I believe, I only rang up a crime reporter a few weeks ago to ask him if he'd heard if he'd finally got paid, you know, what he was chasing. Because they kept it very quiet, mate.
Wow.
But, I couldn't believe it myself, mate.
Oh, I'm gobsmacked because, look, in all honesty, this is the first time I've actually... I've actually heard this. And as I said, you know, he was a very... Yeah. He was a bit weird because he didn't talk to many people. You couldn't...
Always a strange...
He was a loner, man. But the bloke himself, he was fucking... A scary bloke, but not a scary bloke, if that makes sense. You could see it in him.
Violent.
No, but you could see that he was a big man. He wasn't a small man. Yeah. He was just, you know, always walked around without his shirt on and fucking, mate, he could just play squash. He was in the gym. He was fit. He was healthy.
Yeah, he was super fit.
Nobody and sort of crossed his path.
He thought he was a tough guy and, you know, he really wasn't as tough as he thought he fucking was.
Wow.
So, you know, unfortunately, you know, as I say, I wrote about him in my book and I give him the biggest fucking rap and then fucking he turned out he fucking rolled. So anyway, shit happens in life, mate. You can't do much about it.
There was many other men that I know that I met over the years that were a part of your clique. And, mate, talk to us about it. And I know that they're not here now, so that's why I say, talk to us about a few of the blokes that you did knock around with because, mate, you had some notorious hardened men that, you know, just wild bank robbers and fucking staunch crew.
Yeah, well, as I say, well, I mean, Australia's most fucking notorious, of course, with my partner in crime, Nettie, who everyone kept calling me the fucking bodyguard, like in Blue Murder and all that bullshit, which was never the case.
Well, it might have just been the photo, mate, of you both standing there with your arms folded and you looking fucking 7 foot tall and him looking 4 foot tall.
I deliberately stood beside him. It was 1988 or something. I deliberately stood beside him because he didn't look that fucking fit.
No, you did. So, that's
so
right.
I deliberately stood beside him to fucking get the photo done.
It might have been why they thought bodyguard. Wow.
It's become a very notorious. But look, he was a very charismatic bloke, but he was, and we got on like a house on fire for years, mate.
Yeah.
And, but he got jealous. When I put the team together, and I put the team together, and I did all the homework. Whatever there was to do, I did the homework, and I said, right, this is the way we're fucking doing it. And that's the way it fucking went. You know, if we needed the jacks, that was his job. I used to say to him, mate, you just you don't even turn up them. You're too big. You stand out like dog's balls anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to remember, you've only got some of the coppers on side. You haven't got them all on side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, other coppers could pinch us, but once we'd get there, we'd just get them to make a phone call to fucking the Dodger or something, and we'd walk out of there. We'd get our gun back, our fucking money back, everything, and just walk out the fucking joint. And not because fucking I was in there fucking jabbering, because they wouldn't get fuck all out of me. You know what I was like. I don't fucking walk around fucking doing that.
No, very quiet, man. But, I want to ask you something, but tell me what it was like knowing that, all right, you've just got pinched on a blue, but you know in the back of your head that, you know, you only just got to kick back for a little bit and you're going to be walking out of there pretty well. It must have been a pretty amazing feeling within yourself being, you know, a big earner and running the ball up hard and knowing that, look, mate, I could still fucking, you know, no matter what you've got on me, you could in the back of your mind still be laughing and just smiling at them thinking, I'm going home soon. You boys want to hurry up.
Well, I remember when I got the, that was the whole idea of the corruption, you know, that like we were like a giant octopus, tentacles going everywhere and sucking up information on everybody. That's how organised crime I describe it, like a fucking giant octopus. We had fucking arms everywhere, and I had a fucking lot of them. And most of the stuff, even Ned used to get up and fucking make all this shit up in his book and said, he got me out of jail. Who did this? He didn't do a fucking thing for me. I did all these things on my own through my own people. And I remember I got a 7-year sentence because, and they said that I shot at the police and I got pinched with a pound of fucking heroin. In the middle of North Sydney, not one witness, right, at lunchtime.
Peak hour.
Right?
North Sydney and Business
show on
District.
They show on Blue Murder a copper running out of a doorway, and he trips and accidentally blows the window out. No, they fucking come down beside the car, and I tried to take off, and they jammed me in, and they tried to blow me fucking head off. But I threw me fucking head, you know, that fucking awareness came to me, and I just fucking threw myself over, put my hand over my eyes, and all the pellets went through the top of me fucking skull, and out the other fucking side. So I missed the main blast of it, you know? And
is that why you got no hair now? Is that the pellets just fucking skinned you? like the Indians, mate, they scalped you and you got to fucking live with it. Oh, you poor bugger.
I'm just getting fucking taller, mate, and I'm growing through me here.
What an interesting thing, though, to happen. You know, shotgun pellets, you know that they've just gone fucking boom. They've scalped you, and
so, you know,
you're still breathing.
The major headline. Like, you've got to understand, this is the major headline. And then they fucking, I hadn't aborted trial. Thank fuck I did, because the old dog Robinson, his name was, he said, you're right at the top of the tree where all this drug trade is. I'd give you the maximum, you know?
Yeah, right.
So I got away from him. We aborted the trial because they didn't want to nominate who the undercover copper was whose life I threatened, and they put a bug on him, and I threatened his life.
Right.
So that's why they wanted to kill me, and it come right from the top, take him out.
Yeah.
Right? Even though I was still fucking sweet. Yeah, and they were one of the rules of the fucking, of that fucking being in organised crime. I don't call it the green light. It's a fucking made-up fucking name.
Yeah.
You know? It was just part of the organised crime circle that you didn't fucking threaten the coppers, you didn't hurt the coppers, you fucking didn't take everything into the fucking public. You know, like they do today, they fucking take everything into the public.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it fucking burns them up. They shoot up police stations. Yeah. They fucking, you know, just ridiculous shit.
Look, I mean, even just touching on that, I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, but it was inevitable that sooner or later, one of these houses, and look, I was raised by, you know, knockabout blokes like yourself, so I was given that old school mindset and moral. You know, you never shoot up someone's house. You know, never go to the place of business.
Your castle.
Women and children, not involved.
Not involved.
Yet, you know, we hear, and as I said, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but a young girl has just recently been shot in a shooting. I mean, how bad is that to me? I don't know I just don't understand how you could live with yourself feeling that you've just nearly killed a child. Like, it just doesn't.
As I say, different different moral code, mate, you know, different compass altogether. But, you know, like continuing from there, what I was just going to explain to you about that, you know, giant octopus I call, you know, I got the 7 years with 2.5 on the bottom or whatever it was, and then, you know, and it's common knowledge I can talk about it because it's, you know, and I paid the politician who was Rex Bucket Jackson. I didn't pay him. I got someone else to pay him. I was in the camp. But I did it through Paddles Anderson, who was really the Mr. Big before Lenny, you know, and he had all the people. He had the Premier in his fucking kick. He had everyone.
Who was the Premier was there? Neville Ran?
No, Askin.
He was the Premier, was he?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And this is back in the illegal gaming days, you know, like when Paddles had it. But Neville Ran would have been in power then when I was doing business with him.
Yeah.
But I wasn't doing business with fucking Neville Ran. But
no.
I had this Rex Bucket Jackson, who was the corrective services fucking minister. And so we knew he had a bad gambling debt. So, you know, and that was the fucking way into him.
Wow.
You know, like everyone's got a weakness. They fucking used him up. Anyway, next thing I'm out, you know, I paid some money and I'm out doing 18 months. I knew that's what I was going to get. I knew the sentence I was going to get.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was the first bloke to ever have a lie detector test. Me and a bloke called Patrick Hudd were the first blokes ever to have it in the prison system. And just to prove that I never pulled out the gun and aimed it at the police. But, of course, they didn't want to listen to that in the court because they were inadmissible, you know?
Yes, yeah.
But anyway, but I just needed that to throw it up to the judge to let him know. But, you know, the judge was pretty sweet, let's say. All right?
Wow.
So I got 7 years with the fucking 2.5 on the bottom, but I really did about 18 fucking months.
And you did it standing on your head, Spokes.
Fucking did it easy. You know what I mean? So, and, you know, I mean, but that was the fucking beautiful network we had. You know what I mean? So,
back then, I'm in your team. Something went down. Let's say a stick up went down. No one was shot. Getaway car, bang. We're boxed in. We're pinched, right?
Yeah.
What's something like that going to cost? Because, I mean, people listening to this would have no idea and, you know, be sitting there going, oh, fuck, that'd be millions or that'd be hundreds of thousands. Yeah. Or, I mean, what sort of money are you talking about then, back then, that would get you?
You'd be talking 100 in them days.
100, so basically about $1 million today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of money to come up with back then.
But that never occurred anyway.
No, you know, like, it's just...
Like, honestly, everything we did was like fucking commando, mate. It was fucking just spot on, and if no one followed the fucking rules, they were fucking gonski. You know, they were out of the fucking crew in the fucking heartbeat, you know? I mean, we carried everything with us. We put everything on us. We had things here if you were wounded, so we could fucking pick you up and get you to a friendly doctor that we got.
Mm.
But if you were mortally wounded, and I mean fucking mortally and look like dying, we were going to finish you.
Yeah, you had to, yeah.
They were the fucking rules.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone accepted that. So, you know, we kept everything so smart. We never ever harmed one fucking single soul in all years I've ever done. I've been pinched on them. I've never been convicted.
Next week, in part two of The Clink with Graham Henry, we hear more about Graham's time robbing banks and some of the many attempts on his life.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. For the record, for the record, for the record, for the record, for the record.